Today, glorious scenarios, the DFA Daily to the 10th of August 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. We live in uncertain times and I often get requests from my followers to make suggestions as to what to do in such times. But as you know, I do not give and cannot give specific financial advice. But in terms of economic projections, we can certainly discuss different scenarios. And as you know, I continue to present DFA data in these terms with different outcomes and weightings. Scenarios help us to understand the range of possible outcomes in different situations and allows things to move as new data and new events occur. Now, this is what we do with our home price scenarios. And later, I'll run through all the states because I upset a few viewers yesterday by just selecting some relevant examples. Now, before I start tonight, just a quick reminder that tomorrow we'll be running our live event, which is a Q&A session and debate entitled The Great Debate on China, with Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party and Salvatore Bobones from University of Sydney. It'll be an interesting discussion, I think. Already had a few questions come in beforehand. And if you want to participate by asking a question live, just come along at 8 p.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, and take part. I look forward to seeing you then. And the RBA is also going the same way using scenarios. The RBA's updated central scenario for GDP is to contract by 4% in 2020 and to rise by 2% in 2021. And by the way, the RBA rounds GDP growth to the nearest whole number. The GDP contraction over the first half of 2020 is now smaller than the RBA anticipated 3 months ago, but the pace of recovery is expected to be slower than previously forecast. And this was all in the latest statement of monetary policy. Now, this is no surprise given the news about the containment of COVID-19, but then the breakout in Victoria and the resultant stage 4 lockdown. And that's had a significant economic impact, of course. Now, on unemployment, the RBA expects the jobless rate to peak at around 10% in the fourth quarter 2020, and the level to which the official unemployment rate rises will, of course, be dictated by the participation rate. Now, there'll be wild swings in that as restrictions remain in place in many ways that render the official statistics relatively meaningless. In fact, it's probable the real rate is closer to 12 or 13% even now. The trajectory for underlying inflation has also been lowered, and the economy will have a huge output gap over the forecast horizon, as shown by an elevated unemployment rate. This means that wages growth and underlying inflation will stay very, very low. Now, I find it sad that we accept high unemployment as the acceptable variable, but that, of course, is the neoliberal philosophy for you. And there are some other options, as both MMT and those in favour of UBI would contend. The RBA has not attempted to put any downward pressure on the Aussie dollar rate, saying the Australian dollar is now in a range that is broadly consistent with its fundamental determinants. And it also stated that there was not a case for intervention in the foreign exchange market. Intervention in such circumstances is likely to have been limited in its effectiveness, they said. And the board continues to view negative interest rates as being extraordinarily unlikely in Australia, so it looks like monetary policy will remain unchanged for the foreseeable future. And similarly to the May statement of monetary policy, the RBA has included an upside and downside scenario alongside the base case forecasts. The main difference between the scenarios relates to how quickly the virus is controlled in the near term. The base case assumes the current stage 4 restrictions in Victoria are in place for 6 weeks and then are gradually wound back. Restrictions in place in the rest of the country are also assumed to be wound back slowly. The upside scenario assumes that there is a faster series of steps in controlling the virus domestically in the near term. Restrictions are assumed to be lifted, with the exception of international travel, and this would likely see consumer and business confidence recover and a faster recovery in consumption, investment and unemployment. Under this scenario, the unemployment rate would peak at a slightly lower level than under the base case scenario and declined faster, reaching 6% at the end of the forecasting horizon, which is the fourth quarter 2020. Now, it's worth noting that at 6%, the unemployment rate would still be well above where it was pre-COVID, when it was just over 5%. The downside scenario is based on the assumption that there are further periods of outbreaks in Australia and tighter restrictions in certain areas, and it also assumes that the world experiences a widespread resurgence of infections. Under this scenario, it's likely that the recovery in services exports like tourism and overseas students would be delayed further, and consumer spending would continue to fall through the second half of 2020. Business investments would also decline sharply. And it would be expecting in this scenario that domestic activity would take a lot longer to recover, with the economy still well short of its pre-COVID size at the end of 2022. The unemployment rate in this scenario is expected to peak closer to 11% and remain close to that level throughout 2021. Now, I have to say, at this stage, the downside scenario looks more likely than the upside scenario, which of course feeds directly into our modelling. Now, of course, just to remind you that our core market model powers our home price scenarios, and that incorporates all the information that we have available when we actually do the calculations. And this is the current scenario for the whole of Australia, as I shared the other day. Now, if you go to the ACT first, you can see there that over 3 years, we're projecting a 18.5% fall in our baseline scenario. The best case scenario is a fall of 6.1% over 3 years, or 30.7% if things go badly wrong. Now, in New South Wales, the base case scenario is down 21.5% over 3 years. The best case scenario is down 9.1% over 3 years. The worst case scenario is down 33.7% over 3 years. In the Northern Territories, the base case is 17.6% over 3 years, with the best case being at 5.2% down over 3 years, the worst case at 29.8%. Of course, Northern Territories have seen significant drops over recent times, so we've taken that into some account already. In Queensland, the 17.9% is the mid case, with 5.5% down as the best case, and 30.1% down for the worst case scenario over the next 3 years. And in South Australia, 17.1% is the base case over 3 years, down 29.3% in the worst case scenario, and down just 4.7% over 3 years in the best case scenario, with some slight rise over the first 12 months. And for those watching in South Australia who wanted me to show this, apologies for not doing it yesterday. I was just running through so much material, I didn't have the time to go through every single one. But that is not necessarily as good as some other states. If you look at Tasmania, we're thinking there will be some movement into positive territory potentially in our scenario. But our central scenario still indicates a fall rate of around 17.1% or 4.8% on our best case scenario, or down 29.3% in our worst case scenario. So Tasmania may have a short run, but I think eventually gravity will win. And this is Victoria, which has a base case of 23.5% over 3 years, a best case of down 11% over 3 years, or a worst case of 35.7% over 3 years. Whereas Western Australia has a base case of down 18.9% over 3 years, a best case of 6.5% down, and 31.1% down in a worst case scenario. And of course, WA has already seen prices drop 20% since their previous peak, and there is more downside risk, I think, ahead. And finally, just back to Australia. So 20.4% is the midpoint, but of course, there is some wide variations. Now, we'll update these scenarios again, because, of course, as things change, so the scenarios will change. But my main point today is that scenarios help to get a sense of relative risk and also a sense of what may happen. Scenarios stops you being backed into a corner and essentially having to put a specific stake in the ground, which, of course, will change because information continues to morph and change. And so there should be no surprise that scenarios do change. And in a way, that's why I think scenarios are glorious. But of course, they also can be misleading insofar that if you are sucked in to an upside scenario, when in fact the true scenario turns out to be significantly lower, then of course you may not end up in the right place. So you have to apply a little bit of thought and care about how you apply those scenarios to making real-life decisions. And talking about real-life decisions, just to say that we've had a significant positive response to our DFA one-to-one series. And if you want an individual discussion with me about a particular postcode, that's certainly conceivable. I can't give financial advice, but I can discuss data for a given postcode and look at the underlying trends. I can assemble stress, home price, trend data, and also overlay some projections going forward based on my modelling. And you can book a time with me. I'm booked out for the next couple of weeks, but beyond that, there is some space, up to an hour probably. A couple of conversations a day have gone for about 45 minutes on average. And the service is not designed to make a profit. It's simply to cover my costs. So around $100 plus GST payable in advance is required to participate. And if you are interested, you can contact me via my DFA blog. Spaces are limited, of course, each week. So I hope that was of some use. The point I want to leave you with is that scenarios really help to understand what's going on and enables us to think more carefully about what may lie ahead. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.